Esoteric Research Organization.
Hero paranormal, always setting up the pace, man. Crop circle tipping,
Illuminati still tripping,
making those ears perk up, gonna make you question your earth.
You better.
Mystery bloodlines and secret society, creepy shapeshifter sitters come sit beside me.
Yeah, go feel that.
Swords with all these spiral,
acting like UFOs.
So we put space wolf, tiptoe through the dark, third eye blinding, tune in and blast off, blast off.
Blast off, baby.
Blast off.
Blast off on an epic episode of the Hyper Anomalous Esoteric Research Organization podcast, also known as Hero Paranormal. My name is Ryan, the paranormal pontificator of the airwaves, bringing you an amazing episode tonight. Before we get to it, if you haven't had a chance to head on over to heroparanormal.com, please check it out. Ton of content over there for the price of a cup of coffee a month. You have access to all of it. Also, there's a shop over there where you can buy goodies. And if you prefer to support the podcast via tangible products, always know that you can go to happinessmedical.com. Everything you buy there also helps support the podcast. And there, that's that. Done. Moving on. A lot of interesting stuff has been taking place at Space Wolf Research, including wild readings and mysterious alloys, which brings me to the next topic. The thing I'm going to talk about here and delve into is pretty dense. Now, I've gained some information about these mysterious alloys that Bigelow is supposed to have in his quote-unquote possession. There's been some detailed overview, specifically by MUFON Star Team, and it seems as if some believe these matters are gaining notoriety and becoming something of extreme importance. Now, a lot of people are wondering why it's so important at this moment, at this time, and I think a lot of it has to do with things like the Chris Bledsoe book, UFO of God. And people are starting to consider ufology, or ufology, depending on you, how you say it, almost a upcoming religion, right, of the new age. There are definitely viewpoints having to do with that, whether people agree with it or not. And it's interesting because we have what I like to think of as nasatology, which is basically not exactly what the ufologists believe, not exactly what the mainstream believes, but what NASA tells people. And there are nasatologists, there are ufologists, and there is this new UFO religion, which I'm not quite sure where that sits. And these mysterious alloys that Bigelow is supposedly in, at least in theory, has some connection to or possession of. Well, this is interesting because if these are the new relics, if these can be asserted as evidence, then some people consider themselves lost without the evidence. And is it evidence? Evidence of a religion? Is it a relic of a religion? Or is it more likely just part of the UFO phenomena itself? Well, this is where things get hairy, because it is a tangible, physical, nuts and bolts, peripheral, material evidence of something that may not be exactly what it appears to be, something that may be more dimensional in nature. Now, I've seen slag come off of UFOs, and a lot of other people have as well, and these drippings, this slag, this mysterious alloy, seems to have something to do with the Enigma. Question is, how much does it have to do with it? How much is it worth? Why is it of extreme importance, and specifically now that disclosure is seeming to become a constant stream instead of a drip? Well, I argue that it is, in fact, because of this new world religion, which many are considering has something to do with UAP, UFOs, and these non-human intelligences. Now, there are some lineages going all the way back to the Hammurabi Code, which claim to know what's going on, but unless you are extremely well-versed in these archaics, chances are this all seems new. And a lot of folks, this all seems new. So what is real? What isn't? What is considered programming? Mainstream narrative programming is what I like to call it. And do we believe it? Obviously, David Grush came out as a whistleblower. People started to believe it. He was attacked unfairly, in my opinion. However, it doesn't necessarily mean everything he said was 100% as it was relayed to the masses. I respect him for doing what he did, but you have to remember that the treatment of these whistleblowers is going, they're going to go through it, and he's gone through it. They've attacked him and attacked those around him. And by they, I mean those who want no part of this, no part of this situation, scenario, disclosure, anything. So yeah, there's been a lot of programming, specifically through media. And I've talked at length on various podcasts about Leave the World Behind. Well done. Lots of predictive, you know, there was lots of programming in there and of the predictive variety. I saw Civil War the day it came out. Highly recommend not watching that movie. Was not, I mean, there were some talented actors in it, but it was not that great. If anything, the programming was that of introspection, following your own path, specifically career path, and losing humanity. It was not a movie I would recommend. It had its moments, but not anything. Nothing that motivated me to see that movie was exchanged as a payoff by the time I left. So I won't ruin it for anybody that wants to see it and waste their money, but I would not waste your money seeing it. On the other hand, Leave the World Behind, I would absolutely recommend seeing that. Those are two different types of programming, both essential in whatever it is they're trying to get done, but different calibers, to say the least. Now, while there's been a ton of media coverage, specifically interest in these congressional testimonies, etc., relating to UAPs, UFOs, there seems to be a very extensive, repetitive process throughout the world of lots of interest in this topic. And when it gets to certain levels, it's shot down. Whether that be South America, Central America, European countries, there seems to be a lot of relevant material in the official records of these governments. Yet, when it comes to any relevant conversation about it, there is usually no debate. It is whisked away, brushed off the table, and people move on. And the same is true of this recent situation with David Grush. I had the opportunity to have breakfast with someone who had a civilian panel of people whistleblowing a testimony before Congress, the great Joe Buchman. And, you know, in our discussions, he was raising, you know, the fact that it would be nice to see more of this, but we've seen this throughout history. this long history, both in the USA and elsewhere, of expressions of interest in the topic, and then lawmakers moving it to the side. So is it a refusal of us disclosing what is actually taking place? Or is this just part of the process? Is it something else? And it's appearing as if it might be something else, but people are very up in arms over anything material. Any material evidence is of the utmost importance, which I argue may be a distraction. Because as we know, a lot of these experiences are dimensional in nature. Now, the recent Apoc eclipse, of course, people, plenty of YouTubers, podcasters, and researchers said this was the end of the world, the apocalypse. We all knew it wouldn't be. Of course, it wasn't. There were some interesting coincidences and synchronicities, as there usually are with these cosmic events. But it brings me back to the dimensional nature of a lot of different types of high strangeness and phenomena. But what's important is a lot of those, what seemingly now would have been considered wrong, these podcasters, YouTubers, social media influencers, etc., that were coming out doing this stuff, I guarantee you they sold a lot of preparatory food packets, things of that nature. They probably got people to store some water, get some canned food, clean out their bunkers a little bit if they have them. But these are very cathartic experiences. The more experiences like this that we have, specifically through this type of programming, through social media, podcasts, YouTube, shorts, etc., this is a cathartic experience, and films too. We, of course, have films like The Purge, films like White Noise, films like Leave the World Behind, films like Civil War. These are cathartic experiences that predictively program something that may not come about, but prepares the populace for their coming. And many researchers that are well-versed and educated in this arena believe that this has been a long-standing session, a top-down programming, for lack of a better word, of the right things. Not the wrong things, not the stuff they don't want you to know, but the elites are basically trickling down evidence, if you want to call it that, or predictive programming of what they want to eventually become the future, and they will only justify, validate, and allow recognition of the evidence which works into their long-term playbook. Now, sadly, in more modern times, AI and algorithms have become involved, and these have been able to help those in positions of power, even if that be someone you may know, someone like Zuckerberg, Gates, Bezos, Musk. Before they post anything online, they run... they run it through the algorithm and the AI, and they see what kind of response they will most likely get from their post before they post it. Of course, they want to seem cool, appear powerful, appear to be your friend, and get the most socially positive interaction as possible. So AI is changing the landscape. What's more, it's way worse than that. I have a couple of toddlers, and they are getting very proficient at using cell phones, iPads, computers, television remotes. And even though I'm very wary about how much screen time they get, I'm worried because there's been a lot of analysis about screen time and how it affects the human brain. There seems to be something that takes place. And there's also footage online of kids who have devices taken from them, and they freak out, you know, they have huge tantrums, and in some cases they continue, get this, to almost appear to be interacting with a device when it's not there. Now, that being said, we've all probably, at least I have, I'll speak for myself, I've walked around before when I don't have my phone, and I've felt that buzz in my pocket or thought I got a text message or something along those lines when the device is not present. This is eerily familiar and eerily similar to what amputees often report, which is called phantom limbs. Now, this is a phenomenon where they can still sense the presence of missing legs, fingers, hands, arms, and even feel pain where the amputated parts once were. Obviously, that part of their body is no longer there, but they can still feel it from time to time. And it is a phenomenon called phantom limbs. I argue that when this happens with my cell phone, my iWatch, whatever the case might be, is this a phenomenon we should call phantom device phenomenon? Because how is it possible that I feel it and it's not there? And at times I go and check my phone, let's say it's in the next room, and there is in fact a text message. So what's taking place here? A lot of people argue that this is proof we may live in a not exactly base reality, that there is a matrix of sorts. And for those that missed it, and you can in fact find this on YouTube, there was a CERN opening ceremony. Now, it was very interesting. It's obviously a scientific research facility. And they started out with, a display of force. They had screens that looked like portals. They had workers that, you know, started taking off their clothes like they were the village people. It's an opening ceremony that was quite repetitive and I would say creepy. And of course, this is Switzerland. Many people watched it and afterwards said, "What the heck did I just watch?" It was, you know, literally a Goddard tunnel opening ceremony. It had to do with CERN, and it was quite troubling, according to many. And it's, you know, again, a scientific research facility that always has these opening ceremonies. They seem to be steeped in ritual. They claim to be finding these mysterious substances that make up, quote unquote, reality as we know it, or the building blocks of our universe. We have Higgs boson, which of course is the God particle. We also have antimatter. And now they are looking for a mysterious substance they claim makes up 28% of our reality or world as we know it. And it makes you wonder, you know, we have people in the past seeing mock rituals of human sacrifice taking place there on the grounds by people involved with the collider. But, you know, their justification was, hey, it was just a mock ritual. It was just for fun. Well, most rituals are mock rituals. It's rare that you have an actual human sacrifice in public. So my argument is ritual is in fact symbolic, and therefore a human mock sacrifice should be significant from a symbolic viewpoint as exactly that. Well, there is, of course, on the whole reality of symbolism, the reality that they have the god Shiva, a statue of the god, the destroyer of worlds, god of war, and there is very much something that appears to be something, you know, the wheel behind Shiva, which, you know, could be linked to portals, could be linked to the actual machinery inside the Large Hadron Collider. And if you watch the quote-unquote ceremony having to do with CERN and the opening of the Gotthard Tunnel opening ceremony on the other side of Switzerland, you realize that there is a lot more to this. And keep in mind that the Large Hadron Collider is huge, but they're coming up with another one, which is even bigger, and they've pulled the trigger on this. So it begs the question, obviously. We know that many elites are involved with CERN, specifically folks like Klaus Schwab. The list goes on and on. And we know that Switzerland has been home base and neutrally significant for a variety of reasons. A place for people to hide their wealth with Swiss bank accounts, specifically elites. a place to launder wealth, a place to hide things in bunkers. There are over 360,000 bunkers within that country. And Switzerland has long been associated with kind of being a playground for the elite. The elites, the L-ites, definitely love Switzerland. Can't blame them. I wish I had a Swiss bank account of my own, and I'm sure we all do. But these are very interesting fundamental truths about that country that we are not taught in school when we're young. We're taught, you know, I always pictured just the Swiss Alps, good skiing, great hot chocolate, maybe some beer fests, and a hot bikini team that like to ski. But things are much different as I get older and I realize what real impact the Swiss have had specifically in connection to the elites and those who run our world, or at least want to, try to, and plan to. The World Economic Forum, the World Health Organization, the Red Cross, the list goes on and on. But this is one of those places where the significant powers that be, those who we would consider the superclass or power elite, they like to go there, meet up, hang out, and talk things over. And let me tell you, this superclass, this power elite, is very familiar with egregores and thought forms, ceremonies, ritual, and ways to plant the seeds or put things in the minds of the populace so that they may grow and eventually become the crop of thinking in an MK Ultra type way, but become the crop that they can eventually harvest when the time is right. They plant the seeds to their future plans, and eventually they plan very methodically and multi-generationally, I might add. They don't need the quick payoff, 10, 20, 30 years, no big deal. They're looking at multi-generational planification and wealth preservation. And their projects, their plans, etc., are also multi-generational. They have patience, and they don't mind waiting. Now, as an example of some of that, there was a lot of people breaking down during the pandemic, a lot of people going within. We saw strange videos on social media, people diving down in their bathtubs, a lot of ritual there, and people breaking down online. I saw many videos. I know a lot of other people sent me videos. And let's face it, I think everyone had a hard time during the quote-unquote lockdowns. No one likes to be locked down. People like freedom. Freedom is essential and a fundamental basic need of a human being. Therefore, it makes sense that people would, you know, be acting in this manner. Not to mention the fact that there was so much fear porn going on. There was, you know, all this, if you watch the media nonstop, which you're more likely to do, you're more likely to watch the news when you're locked down and you can't leave your house. It appeared as if the entire world was slowly dying. People were just dropping like flies. And what we find is this is not, you know, when we see these things roll out, and by roll out, I mean these things which in retrospect appear more, again, by the same ruling class, the superclass and power elite, these fundamental narratives, when we see them in place, the seeds that are sown and eventually harvested are not necessarily the reality of what is taking place in the utmost sense. And we see this because I noticed that a lot of people changed after that, and I'm sure I changed as well. But this was a time that I'm sure, retrospectively, my grandchildren will not believe, I hope. And I would hope that this is not something that has to be endured again. But it was surreal, to say the least. One of those come-to-Jesus, aha moments. Those places when you rely on a higher power, you become closer to God. And man, did it ever affect everybody differently? And it has to do something, in my opinion. There was quite some time that that went on. And speaking of come to Jesus and God moments, we're noticing that there is a lot of things that people went down rabbit holes on. Gematria is one of those, depending on how you say it. Numerology was another one. And people delved deeply into cryptocurrency. And this all kind of intertwines and comes together. Because numerology, gematria, Bitcoin, and believe it or not, even God have some things in common when looking at this reality as a matrix program. Specifically, with God in gematria, we have a number 72. And there's 72 bits in Bitcoin when you look at the code. So Bitcoin is also 72. Now keep in mind, on the 72nd day, Bitcoin hit $72,000. And there's more. The largest gold nugget ever found, discovered by two miners, John Deason and Richard Oates, in the state of Victoria, Australia, was 72 kilograms. That's the largest gold nugget ever found. So here we have Bitcoin at 72, the largest gold nugget at 72, God at 72, Bitcoin hitting 72,000 on the 72nd day, and we start to realize there may be some underlying synchronicities which are hard to escape algorithmically. So yeah, is it a waking dream? Is it reality? Is it a matrix of sorts? It's definitely dimensional, I can tell you that much. And synchronicity and coincidence are something that many theorists just no longer believe in when they start to see these numbers pop up over and over and over again. And of course, then the question arises, who can see beyond it? Who can see beyond the lie? Who can see beyond the matrix? Well, typically people believe it's the elites or the 1%, right, that can see behind the matrix. And a lot of people say, oh, the elites, it's not possible. They're not real people. You get to a high enough level and they are lizards. Now, lizards has more or less been the word of choice to describe wealthy superclass, wealthy elites. And this is among podcast hosts for years and years. If you're wealthy, you're in the top 1%. They call you a lizard. It's not meaning you're an actual reptilian, but of course the joke, the tongue-in-cheek joke, is that if you get high enough on the ladder, eventually you run into these non-human entities, which may have reptilian bloodlines adjacent to them, just below them, or as middle management. So, and this is interesting because I was highly chastised some time ago on a podcast, very famous podcast, actually, a very popular podcast that many people like, and they use the word lizard all the time. They throw it around just to mean wealthy elites. And most podcasts these days in the conspiracy realm do this. So it's not a shocker, you know, lizards, you know, those who are in the top 1% by state, etc., or the wealthy class. And in this particular discussion on this podcast, they said, what is your opinion of these people? Well, long story short, I used the term lizard. And lizard is, obviously, I didn't mean it in a derogatory way. I just meant wealthy elites, as many conspiracy podcast hosts use the term to talk about anybody who's wealthy and elite. And I mean, don't we all want to be wealthy? Don't we all would prefer to be more elite, have a higher tax bracket? Of course we would. It'd be great to take another, you know, step up on the ladder, moving on up, as they used to say in the Jeffersons. Nothing wrong with that. And let's face it, I mean, every business owner today is crushed after taxes. It's the worst part of the game. It's hard to make any money. It's hard to keep any money. It's hard to beat the system. However, it does appear as if some have the playbook. and the algorithm, if you will, they have the ability or the knowledge to beat the system. They are quote-unquote wise as serpents, as many ancient texts write. They know how to somehow use financial alchemy and manipulate the system to their advantage. And lo and behold, certain individuals appear to have that Midas touch. They are able to become wealthy and stay wealthy very easily. And we have many examples of this. For example, you see it all the time. You know, these entrepreneurs that'll lose everything and start over and they're back where they were or higher within a very short period of time. And you hear it all the time on, you know, entrepreneur coaching videos. You see it in real time with people like Donald Trump. You know, I forget how many times he's claimed bankruptcy, pulled himself up from his bootstraps, and no matter what a big break he got originally, he always comes back bigger, badder, and more wealthy than before. You see this over and over again, and therefore, people who are able to somehow make a mockery of the system, figure out the system, or understand how to manipulate the rule book, the playbook, the algorithm, this reality to accommodate their goals and become wealthy very easily, rise to quite literally elite status. So it's not a bad thing when I talk about people being lizards, but I was crushed on this particular podcast for calling a certain group of people lizards. Hey, it's not a bad thing. Sometimes I wish I was more lizard, if you know what I mean. So anyway, we're going to go deep into this. And getting back to this particular podcast where I was criticized. Yeah, I said it. I said it. I'll be honest. Yeah, you know, they're lizards. And then I clarified, actually, in the same sentence, meaning, this is what I said, meaning they are wealthy elites. Well, I was jumped on, luckily. So we're going to jump into this full on. I don't mean to offend anybody calling certain people lizards in the past, present, or future. And well, you know. But yeah, you know, I wish I was a lizard, you know. So isn't that the goal? The American dream, get to be a lizard, get the white picket fence, and yada, yada, yada. So not in a bad way, but anyway, back to my original point. The original point is that when people say, who can see behind the matrix? Who can see behind the sham, the narrative, the reality, our base reality? Now, many contend and claim that there is no justifiable, acceptable base reality, that the odds are billions to one that we live in a matrix. So, I would argue that those with the most knowledge, which typically have the most wealth, which typically are in the top tier, for example, whatever you want to call them, elites, one percenters, lizards, the superclass, the power elite, the people in the know, the illuminated, and these aren't bad terms. This is what everybody wants to be. Let's face it, everybody wants to do well. So these are not bad terms, and I wish people would realize that, because the closer you get to the capstone of power and control, the closer you get to that, well, disengaged eye of providence, if you want to call it that. You know, in the Illuminati, typically when you see an Illuminati pyramid, there is the separated capstone with the eye of providence, the all-seeing eye, which is separated from the lower tiers, the lower levels. Keep in mind, in that, we also have the numerology involved of 72, which I mentioned earlier, meaning that 72 that has to do with 72 bits in Bitcoin, 72 in gematria for the word God, 72 for Bitcoin, and yes, the numerological synchronicity of 72, there are 72 blocks in the lower pyramid below the separated capstone, the Eye of Providence, above it. And this is all in good reason, because many of us, including myself, believe that our founding fathers, creating the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, etc., that they were divinely inspired. I 100% believe that. So it would make sense that the Eye of Providence, the all-seeing eye, and the pyramid of, that we have on the dollar bill, for example, that this would be important. In my opinion, it is. It is very important because it says that between the, in symbolism, it says that there is a capstone which is separated from that of humanity, which honestly is the Eye of Providence, a symbol with a very secret meaning, a straightforward image. And it's an eye set within a triangle, which is pretty magical. It's a cryptic symbol, a covert visual sign that's been come to be associated with Freemasonry, but also with the Illuminati, a secret group of elite individuals allegedly seeking to control the affairs of the planet. So the Eye of Providence is very important. It is appearing on countless churches, Masonic buildings worldwide. It is also featured on the reverse of the American $1 bill, as well as the Great Seal of the United States. It is a very important symbol. And in fact, there are symbols biblically similar to the Eye of Providence, and it fascinates many scholars. Specifically, the Eye of Providence was originally a Christian symbol, and this is important to note. The Eye of Providence is in Pontormo's Supper at Amos, this is a beautiful work of art made in 1525. Later it was repainted, and it hid a three-sided face prohibited by the Counter-Reformation at the time, but the Eye of Providence was originally a Christian symbol, and artwork makes this obvious. The earliest examples of the Eye of Providence can be seen in religious art from the Renaissance period, which represented an all-seeing creator, an all-seeing omnipotent God, he who sees all. And although the symbol is something that we now see as very iconic in many books, it originally had to do with divine providence. In other words, God's benevolence. And it just means that everything will be seen. You know, this is how Christianity would say, whatever you do, God is going to see it. And it's interesting that they chose the triangle, which of course, a very long-standing symbol of the Trinity, Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. And God's been depicted in the past with a halo that was triangular in shape. These rays of light that are often shown emanating from the Eye of Providence pre-exist much of the iconography we see now, but you'll find this in books by the Lucius Trust, in all sorts of illuminated Rosicrucian, Christian, Freemasonic origins. And although it is a little bit, odd and eerie, I guess, to see this disembodied eye overlooking everything, it just means to symbolize that God can see all. And it's fair to say that it has an impact. If you are constantly being watched, if you're under constant vigilance, watchfulness, etc., you will most likely behave better than if you think you can occult your behavior in the shadows. Of course, the ancient Egyptians were the originators of the detached eye, and they used this symbol often. They would put it on coffins that allowed the dead to see in the afterlife. They would use it as a similar hybrid of the Eye of Providence and a motif that included We've all seen the Eye of Horus, a hybrid of the human and falcon eye, and many Egyptian hieroglyphs, can't talk, have this eye that moves on in Christianity and basically has become something quite popular. The Eye of Providence is a symbol which has been very popular in our time. And it is something that, I mean, it's on the $1 bill. And keep in mind that this is important because many different eyes of Providence have been made. One that stands out says mercy, justice, and vigilance. Now, this would be in Bentham's Panopticon prison, and it was designed to ensure that inmates never knew when they were being watched. So again, that unblinking eye of Providence always watching. And it's very important because it reminds us that if there is this matrix, if there is this reality that is constantly being monitored, and that the top tiers of society, the lizards, the one percenters, the wealthy, the aristocratic, the superclass, the power elite, are closer to the Eye of Providence, then wouldn't that mean that they are closer to God himself? This would basically mean that. And sure, in conspiracy circles, there is the belief that royal families have these quote-unquote special bloodlines, and that in some cases, they are doing things to communicate with non-human intelligence. And there we go again. We're talking about a separation of the pyramid, the lower levels, the blocks, and the higher level, the separated, elevated, floating capstone, or the Eye of Providence. These are very similar symbols, whether you're talking about the Illuminati in a good way or the Illuminati in a bad way, which in my opinion, there are of course white hats, black hats, and every other hat in between. But this symbol is very appropriately used in the New World Order. The national symbol of the U.S. Great Seal was first used in 1782. And as I said, it has 72 blocks, similar to the 72 bits of Bitcoin, similar to this in gematria, the word God with 72. Keep in mind that Bitcoin was worth 72,000 in the 72nd day. And this moves on and on. This year in particular, I've seen a lot of coincidence when it comes to the number 72. And keep in mind that 72, 7 plus 2 is 9. Now, Nikola Tesla, of course, said that man who understands the power of the numbers 3, 6, and 9 holds the key to the universe and the power to the universe. Well, 7 plus 2 is 9. And of course, the pyramid is three-sided. We have 93 in almost all occult works by Aleister Crowley, the number 9 and 3 appear. In fact, it's almost a greeting in Thelema, 9-3. That's how you say hi, that's how you say bye, and they understand the 9 and the 3. But where is the 6, right? If you know 3, 6, and 9, you have the keys to the universe, the power of the universe. Well, we're talking about all these numbers, 3, 6, and 9, being divisible by 3. So they're literally 1, 2, and 3 divisible by 3. So, I find it coincidental, to say the least, that, you know, base, lower vibrational, let's just call it the number of the beast, is 666. So if we know 3, 6, and 9, we have the keys to the universe, almost like a Solomon magic scenario, according to Nikola Tesla. The number of the beast is 666. We have Thelema incorporating 3 and 9, but leaving out 6. And we realize that the Trinity becomes very important, these numbers divisible by 3. Now, 72, getting back to this 72, because I'm fascinated by 72 and how it is, you know, not only involved with the word God through gematria and the numerology, Bitcoin, of course, the 72 blocks of the lower pyramid, and the all-seeing eye above it, the fact that the code itself is 72 bits, the fact that on the 72nd week, Bitcoin was worth 72,000, and of course, last but not least, the fact that the largest nugget ever found was 72 kilograms. Wealth is definitely at hand here. And 72, go figure, is divisible by 3. You get 24. So let's get back to, I don't want to turn this into a gematria numerology expose, but let's just say the number 72 keeps popping up. And it's very interesting that it pops up with these things that are very similar to one another wealth-wise. You know, we have the dollar bill with the eye of providence. And then, of course, the gold, the Bitcoin, God, etc. And everything seems to be divisible by 3, the Trinity. And many secret societies, mystery schools, illuminated orders, all utilize the triangle as a symbol of not only their stability and structure, but their divinity. So this is important as well. And specifically with the United States, the eye above the pyramid is a reflection of divine divinity and providence in the creation of our great country. And we are also explained this, and it's demonstrated by the terms annuit coeptus, in other words, Latin for God has favored our undertaking, and novus ordo seclorum, in other words, a new order for the world. Very important when it comes to closely examining the numerology and the pyramid and the symbology of what hovers above the pyramid. The eagle's also on the dollar bill, which I believe is very important, holding 13 arrows. Has a shield with 13 stripes, and of course 13 stars in the constellation over its head. Of course, many will argue that there were 13 original states, but others will argue that this 13 is relevant, specifically because of the 13 families that basically made America. Some have called them the 13 Illuminati families. Others say there are 13 Illuminati, 13 Illuminati families that secretly control the world. Okay, so 13 bloodlines are said to have connections to wealth and power, and that their power is unimaginable, and that these families span from Europe across the world everywhere. So let's take a hard, good look at these 13 families, because believe it or not, there is a CIA document made by an author and educator where he presented some of the most compelling details about these quote-unquote Illuminati bloodlines. So let's look at them. Reading from this CIA document, it says, and this was originally published in 1995, Bloodlines of the Illuminati. I'm going to dig in, go down about 3 paragraphs, and it says, I am not a conspiracy theorist. I deal with real facts, not theory. Some of the people I write about, I have met. Some of the people I expose are alive and very dangerous. The darkness has never liked the light, yet many of the secrets of the Illuminati are locked up tightly, simply because secrecy is a way of life. It is such a way of life that they resent the Carol Quigleys and the James H. Billingtons, who want to tell real historical facts rather than doctored up stories and myths. I have been an intense student of history since I could read, and I am deeply committed to the facts of history rather than the cover stories the public is fed to manipulate them. I'm going to fast forward and head down to some of the more juicy details here. And it says, and I quote, "In mockery and imitation of God's 12 tribes," meaning the 12 tribes of Israel, "Satan blessed 12 bloodlines. One of these bloodlines was the Ishmaeli bloodline, from which a special elite line developed alchemy, assassination techniques, and other occult practices. One bloodline was Egyptian, Celtic, Druidic, from which Druidism was developed. One bloodline was in the Orient and developed Oriental magic. One lineage was from the tribe of Dan and was used as a Judas Iscariot type seed. The royalty of the tribe of Dan have descended down through history as a powerful satanic bloodline. The 13th or final bloodline was copied after God's royal lineage of Jesus. This was the satanic house of David, with their blood, which they believed is not only from the house of David, but also from the lineage of Jesus, who they claim had a wife and children. The 13th satanic bloodline was instilled with direct seed of Satan, so they would not only carry Christ's blood, but also the blood of his brother, quote-unquote, Lucifer. One of the bloodlines goes back to Babylon and are descended from Nimrod. Down through the years, the occult world has remained hidden from the history books. They have ruled behind the scenes. So here we get a glimpse, right, into what some call are the Merovingian bloodline. And it gets very interesting when you start looking at what is called monopoly capitalism, which is when these individuals come into any given sector and just take over. We've seen that with all kinds of different clubs, the Club of Rome, the Council of Nine, the Council of 13, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it goes on and on. So let's look at who these allegedly are. And this is by Fritz Springmeier. Here is a list of who theoretically are the 13 bloodlines. The Astor family, we all know, John Jacob Astor, the original founder of the Astor fortune. And as you go down, you find that that family has a long history in controlling a lot. A lot. I mean, there's chapters and chapters and chapters on the Astors. In summary, the Astors, basically John Jacob Astor and his connections to Satanism, it is alleged that he and his son and grandson, who led the Astor family after John Jacob died, that they had, well, basically connections to corruption, according to this writing. And it reads, "We examined Bao Satanism, and the occult had a hold on England even back when John Jacob Astor came to the New World. Three important occult organizations of the 17th and 18th century were introduced. We have looked at the Chandler family, a branch of the Astor family, which is part of Satanism, and we also looked at how the Roosevelts and Delano families have been associated with the Astors." Okay, so moving on. We have the Bundy bloodline. And this is a big bloodline. You remember the guys in the desert dressed up like cowboys? They were on land that they leased from the federal government. The FBI got involved. It was, it started getting kind of hurt. That is a distant relative of the Bundy bloodline. The Bundys, of course, are known for other things. Ted Bundy, of course, is someone who is allegedly related to the Bundy family of the hierarchy. And he was, in fact, a serial killer in Utah, nonetheless. But the Bundys have a lot of power, and they are listed in the 13 Illuminati bloodlines. And I'm talking, it goes through tons. And then, of course, we have the Collins bloodline. And many people argue that this is where the term the Collins elite comes from. The Collins elite, which allegedly are the tongue-in-cheek name given to those in the government who do not want disclosure of UFO material. This was popularized in the book by Nick Redfern, Final Events, and by Ray Beauchamp, the priest, who first used the term the Collins Elite. So there is that. So we've covered the Collins bloodline. If they're completely related or not, nobody's entirely sure. But revisiting the Collins family, it becomes important to note that most members try to conceal their beliefs and their pagan magical systems in the Collins family. All right, moving on. The next family who is listed here is, it's important to note that there's 13, right? The next one is the DuPonts. This is, quote-unquote, a dynasty of satanic royalty. Interestingly enough, my grandfather's brother was in a relationship with a DuPont. I heard a lot of wild stories about DuPont family members, their massive wealth, and let's just say they were a little wild. They were wild. I'm going to keep my mouth shut after that because they're a very powerful family. And then there is the Freeman bloodline. They also apparently have something to do with being the discoverers of the Priory of Sion. What's the Priory of Sion? If you've seen Dan Brown's book, then you know that the Priory of Sion is basically this bloodline, the holy bloodline, the holy grail, technically, the bloodline of Jesus, if you want to call that, and those who protect it, right? An organization that is so unknown, so secretive, that even to talk about it is deemed as being careless. So if you've seen any of Dan Brown's, you know, the Da Vinci Code or any of that, it talks about the Priory of Sion, and of course, the Freeman. Freeman family has written many books and have Pulitzer Prize winners who have written on them. Anyway, very, very interesting family. Then we have the Kennedy family, which, I mean, we all know the Kennedys and the ties to other elite families. There's the Scottish Kennedys, and anyway, they're related to a bunch of other Kennedys, and the Kennedy bloodline is, in short, very powerful. Now, moving over to Asia, there is the Lee family. The Lees are very well known in Chinese secret societies and in many American cities and states. And they have ties to, of course, the Yakuza, the Illuminati, the bloodline of the Red Dragon, etc. A lot of different clans. Very powerful family, the Lees. And They have power worldwide. Then the next one is the Onassis bloodline. Of course, many of us know about Onassis, the one who got with Jackie Kennedy. And we know all about their money and the tons of power that the Onassis family had. They, of course, are also related to a bunch of other families within them. And then the Rockefeller bloodline is mentioned. So the Rockefellers provide large grants to various religious organizations. They, of course, turned the United States to be very dependent upon oil. Keep in mind that cars previously ran on all kinds of things. First, it was electricity. Then cars were running on, you know, people had stills on their farms and they were running their tractors and cars on alcohol. This was very economical. And of course, the Rockefellers came in and basically switched everything over through a power grab and a power move to oil. They had a corner on the market and they weren't trying. Even alcohol prohibition, in my opinion, had to do with, you know, they didn't care if people were drinking themselves to death. This had nothing to do with it. They just wanted people to not have alcohol, to not have stills at their farms and ranches and homes, not be able to power their machinery, tractors, and cars on this stuff. They wanted everybody to be dependent on oil. And the Rockefellers are, of course, a massive oil baron family. And then one of the largest and one of the most intelligent, wealthy cults or bloodlines, financial wizards, the Rothschild bloodline. These are, of course, very, very dynastic in nature. And they have been, well, throughout time, the financiers of just about everything. People call them the co-masters of the world because they have funded almost every major world war, both sides, that is. And the same is true of World War II, and the Rothschilds are definitely in the top 13 Illuminati bloodline families. The House of Rothschild is well known for its power in England, France, and across the world, to be completely honest. So the Rothschilds could have an entire podcast about them, but I won't bore you with the Rothschilds, but just be aware that they have different houses: the British House, the French House, the Austrian House. And they have a Morgan connection, the same Morgans, you know, the J.P. Morgan, the guy that said millionaires don't believe in astrology, billionaires do. And they have ties to the Krupps of Germany, and the Rothschilds are still very, very powerful, to say the least. Then there is the Russell bloodline. You may have heard of the Russell Trust, of course, the Watchtower and the Masons. The Watchtower Society goes on and on. The Russells are very powerful. They are included in the 13 Illuminati bloodlines, and with good reason. So, because they're also, you know, a family that has a lot of ties to other families. And there's an interesting, bloodline note in the CIA.gov document, which goes into, some interesting stuff where it has to do with different churches, and it goes into presidents and it explains the ties between them. And it's shocking, you know. The Van Duyn bloodline is another that is very, you know, huge. And if you don't recognize that name, that's okay. Van Duyn, Van Dyne, these are people who basically came over and started Planned Parenthood, a bunch of other trusts, foundations, the Lilly Endowment, the Mellons, of course, you've heard of the Mellons, the Reynolds, like Reynolds Wrap, the Strauss, the Morgans. Anyway, they're all intertwined. You look deep enough and all these families are intertwined. So, you know, the Collins, the Whitneys, the Vanderbilts. Anyway, in conclusion, the Van Duyn family is intertwined with all of them. It's basically like Game of Thrones when you read this. And it all is basically hovering around this idea, this Dan Brown idea, this one of my favorite movies for sure is the Dan Brown movie, The Da Vinci Code. And of course, much like Fritz Springmeier's writings, Dan Brown's movies, people try to debunk all this and they say it has nothing to do with any of this. However, I do find it's interesting that they all revolve around and hover around this theory that the Merovingian bloodline is something that shares congruence traits within all 13 of these quote-unquote satanic bloodlines, which are literally the 13 Illuminati bloodlines. They all seem to share this curse of Canaan. It is the Canaanites. That's where the word Canaan comes from. And, you know, these 13 Illuminati bloodlines is where the Antichrist, theoretically, will come from in biblical text. And this bloodline, the Merovingian bloodline, believes that it has both the holy blood of Jesus and the blood or seed of Satan And basically, they say they will be wise as serpents, if you know what I mean. And there is where the term lizards come from. You know, if they're reptilian, then they will be wise as serpents. So when people use the term, oh, those lizards, the closer you get to the top of the cabal, closer you get to the top of the pyramid, the better you do in life, the higher your tax bracket, the closer you get to the quote-unquote reptilians. In other words, those who are as wise as serpents. So it's important to separate the wheat from the chaff. Do I know if you go high enough if you run into actual reptilian entities? I don't. I've never seen one. If I had seen one, I would tell you. I've seen a lot of stuff, but I've never seen a reptilian entity. If they existed, and if I had seen one, I would 100% put it on the line. I'd say, these things exist. You know, I wouldn't hold any punches or pull any punches. I would be honest with you, but I've never seen one. Inasmuch as my research goes, all these bloodlines and this reptilian, quote unquote, symbology, in my opinion, makes reference to the very fact that they may be as wise as serpents. And you will see them all utilize serpents in a lot of their rituals, their ceremonies. Even in the Orient, you know, the dragon is a big deal. The serpent is a big deal. The red dragon bloodline, the Li bloodline. And all of these use the symbol of serpents. And many, you know, of these secret orders use the symbol of serpents. So realistically, if you combine these two bloods, the blood of Jesus and the blood of Satan, theoretically, or seed, quote unquote, in its bloodline, then in biblical text and in many other old writings, this is what you end up with. Those who may be as wise as serpents. And this is where mystery religions of Babylon and Egypt and many going back almost to the beginnings of human history write about those who are wise. Knowledge, of course, even in the Garden of Eden, was described as coming from the serpent. The serpent is the one who bestowed knowledge upon Adam and Eve. So with that, I will leave you. You make your own decisions. But when you talk about, you know, hey, I hope next year I get closer to the lizards, because let's be honest, the lizards have it pretty good when it comes to these tax brackets, these financial benefits, and ease of life, at least in this material realm. Is it possible they know more than we do? Is it possible they know how the system works? Well, they definitely know more than the masses, because they're able to manipulate the system to their own goals, to their own benefit. And this is obvious with their material wealth. Last but not least, if you haven't gone over to heroparanormal.com, please head on over there. For the price of a cup of coffee a month, you access all the content behind the wall. There's a bunch of it. Have a very blessed night. Thanks for listening. And until next time, keep your eyes to the skies, feet on the ground, but don't forget to take a look around.
Esoteric Research Organization.
Hero Paranormal, always setting up the pace, man. Crop circle tipping.
Illuminati still tripping.
Making those ears perk up, gonna make you question your earth.
You better.
Mystery bloodlines and secret society. Creepy shapeshifter sitters come sit beside me.
Yeah, go feel that.
Swords with all these spiral,
acting like UFOs. Say what?
So we put space wolf tiptoe through the dark. Third eye blinding, tune in and blast off, blast off.
Blast off, baby.
Blast off.